Ladies and gentlemen, today is the first day of the rest of your life. And now, listen in as Tristan and Johnny bring it all to the table on the Vision Board Podcast.
Guys, welcome back. Episode 168 of the Vision Board Podcast. I'm Tristan Cannell, and alongside me, my man, Johnny Stofko.
What's up, TK? What's up, everybody? Tristan Cannell in the house, the Vision Board Podcast. How's it going?
Yeah, man. How are you?
Good, man. I'm feeling great. I know we got a dude we've been waiting for a long time to bring on the show.
Yeah, brother. We got a busy day, don't we?
Yeah.
Joe DeCenter.
Dude, hashtag Joe DeCenter, the Spartan Race. This guy is the guy behind a global movement of endurance athletes, and it's more than just a obstacle course, right?
Yeah, have you seen some of the, you know,
it's chaos.
Yeah, when you look at it on YouTube, even just picking the brain of a couple of my friends that have actually done it here in Australia, well, they're here.
Yeah,
it's like, well, it nearly seems like a bit of a, what's that word for it,
a cult?
When it's like kind of your life coming out.
Oh, interesting.
What's that called?
Are you talking about like individually the course is a representation of like your fears?
Of Joe, I reckon.
Oh,
it's like, because
okay.
He's had a lot of obstacles thrown in front of himself, as we kind of will touch upon, like, just to, so we can
saying.
Kind of say out, his parents died, you know, when he was younger.
Yeah, so it's almost like, you know what I mean? The Spartan Race is a direct, like, symbiotic relationship to Joe's struggles.
And he's kind of caring nature that he says, well, if you can overcome these obstacles, this will put you in a great state of mind to kind of relating that back into the real world. So then when you're something small that we kind of give up on, like just say we don't get a job, or the girl says no to us when we ask her out, that's really two really minimal things that we can get over if we know how to, and we've had obstacles put in our way before.
Think of the, like, the obstacles itself as a mental game, but also a physical game. But think about Joe in day one, before like the Spartan Race was a thing and he was designing the course and he was doing his trial and error. You kind of have to have like a narcissistic, a condescending approach. Like, here, people, to the masses, here's a course that I've designed that it's a bitch. It's so hard. I give this to you, and if you complete this, you will be better for it.
Yeah.
That's kind of like, when you think about it on that, like, not knowing it was going to be a hit, not knowing that the world would take it on, how many other Spartan races failed?
Yeah, but it wasn't a hit. It wasn't a hit for a good 12 or 13 years. It's actually interesting. I don't know. Maybe it's the changing way, the more accepting way of the world right now. But
of just like the
community. Of extreme. You know, have you noticed that? Kind of,
you're
like
right.
People are more open to a little bit more.
CrossFit, the obstacle courses. I think a huge integral part of like being healthy and being happy is community. So like the biggest – I've never done a Spartan race. I've done a few of the Tough Mudders, which, you know, they're minimal in comparison. But I do know when you're at these events, and if you watch the Spartan Race or if you partake, it's a sense of community, and it's almost a sense, if we're going to suffer, if we're suffering together, it makes it a little bit easier.
So, you know, it's competitive, but you know they time you and they display all your times on their website. So it's a little bit different to a Tough Mudder where you kind of do it as a tribe and it's all just a collective of just doing it. There's also that competitive sort of drive as well.
So I guess that would attract then a different mindset.
Yeah.
A Spartan mindset sort of thing. And
that's probably how they can push it into professional competition too.
It's interesting because we've talked to Rich Roll before on the show, who does endurance events, these things called ultras. We've talked to Brian McKenzie, who partakes in these 100-mile events that take 30 to 40 hours. Mm. But me personally, I don't work out. I don't train for that sort of sadistic approach of punishment. I train, like, that's why these events, they don't speak to me. I like the meditative side of working
out.
I'm
scared of them, man.
It's not that a fear that I have. It's just more about I don't find the like solitude or resolute in that sort of event. I'd much rather do that alone, almost. Or I wouldn't want to be, I guess, the exposure sort of thing doesn't speak to me.
I guess it depends on body types and things like that as well, because I'll probably be a little bit more scared. That I'm probably more of an explosive sort of dude that kind of like a short of everything I used to do.
Like sprinting.
Like sprinting, you know.
Squatting heavy.
Yeah, it's just kind of, I like things that are over like really quickly. It'd be interesting, maybe I should do it just to test my body in terms of an extreme. How long can I'm not really that great with my stamina.
Yeah.
So
I look at it this way, man. I look at our body, this flesh vehicle we get. We get one, and Tim Ferriss says there are no free lunches. So you put your body through that sort of excruciating pain long term over and over again, there has to be, like, interesting fact, the Olympians, of all the sports, winter and summer, the Olympic athlete that lives the shortest amount of life, so who dies the youngest, are the long-distance runners. So the reason why is that when you're exuding that sort of effort for a long period of time, specifically cardiovascular, your body exudes out free radicals, which then promote opposite of, like, you know, anti-inflammation. They cause inflammation and then reproduces bad cellular growth. So that, along with other things about – it's not that a fear of mine of doing the long event. I don't see the – I don't have the mental – I think people do these events – as a mind war sort of thing.
Suit different personality types.
Do they speak to you? Like, would you ever see, because when I see Spartan Race flyers, it's like, I'd much rather box 12 rounds, or which is a war in itself. It's person to person, but it's always like, went back to Rich Roll, who are the type of people who do these ultra endurance events? And he's like, a lot of them are like myself. He said, recovering addicts or have gone through a lot of
extremes, pushing your body to
extremes. Addiction, things like that, to that sort. But it's definitely a good movement. It's definitely a positive. But, man, I'd like to see the stats on, the demographics of those events. Are they more male? Are they more female? Is it both? Are they allowed to compete at the same time? What are the age brackets? Are there injuries? How do you train up? Are there Spartan gyms? All these questions that we'll get to ask Joe. We only have a limited amount of time, but, you know, we're not going to be able to touch base on all of those, but it's going to be interesting to get them on.
No, it gives us things to do after, research our own.
There you go.
Yeah, before we get Joe on the show, just a big thank you for everyone subscribing to the show, leaving us 5-star reviews on iTunes. That really helps us in the rankings. So if you haven't yet, please do that. Jump on iTunes and please leave us a 5-star review.
Yeah, guys, we appreciate everybody who's been on board. December will be 2 years for the Vision Board podcast. Any new fans or listeners, we'd love for you to go to iTunes, subscribe to the show, and leave us some kind words, and also get a hold of Tristan.
Yeah, for sure. All right, guys, let's get straight to it. I present Joe DeSena. All right, guys, our special guest is Joe DeSena. Joe is the founder and CEO of Spartan Race, which has grown the brand to 170 events and nearly 25 countries, and he's reached over 1 million global participants. He's a New York Times bestselling author of Spartan Up, and also hosts the hit podcast Spartan Up. We welcome Joe DeSena. Joe, welcome to the Vision Board podcast, bud.
Thanks for having me. I'm just sitting at a little outdoor cafe here in Vancouver. The weather is unbelievable, and I gotta literally kiss the ground right now at how great life is.
That's an amazing insight and an awesome picture. Tristan and I are in Sydney, Australia, and we can't complain as well. But Joe, let's talk about day one, or your mindset before the Spartan Race became this global movement. What were your initial intentions with creating that?
You know, my mother was into health and wellness in the 1970s before anybody was. She was connected to India through a random connection. She got into becoming a vegan, teaching meditation, yoga, et cetera. And she pounded this vision into my head, my sister's head. We didn't buy into any of it. We thought she was an absolute crackpot along with the rest of the neighborhood. But fast forward 20 years. And my mind was more open to it as it became normal in the world, right? Whole Foods started opening up in locations. There were actual yoga magazines. It became kind of mainstream. And I saw over the years, everybody she connected with, she transformed their lives. She got them into eating healthy. And, you know, a lot of people just don't know how to live a healthy lifestyle. That touches, you know, not just the food side of it, but the physical side, the mental side, and just your whole being and having a purpose. And so Spartan is a 17-year-old startup. And for 15 of those years, it just lost money and we struggled. And I can't even say for the last 2 years, we're not struggling. Any time we have a business struggle. But I mean, on a less crunchy, less focus on meditation and yoga and being vegan and more focus on badass and grit. Obviously, when you dive deep into what we stand for, you know, what our values are, it is steeped pretty deeply in resiliency, grit, but also in health and wellness and yoga and meditation. And believe it or not, I was just getting a foot massage. If you tell anybody, I'll deny it. But anyway, that's where we came from, and we're 35 countries now, 1 million participants a year. I don't know, 5 or 6 million Facebook fans, and lots of emails and podcasts on a daily basis.
Joe, you mentioned that, you know, a lot of people, the collective, they struggle with how to live. Do you feel that that is a lost connection with who we are as people, or just us being blinded by what's being thrown at us, all the stimulus from left, right, and center?
You know, we have 4 children now, and so you can't really blame us, because depending on the environment, we grow up in an environment. I just watched my kids transform. When we were on the farm, and I had a Kung Fu master living with us, and my kids did Kung Fu twice a day, and I only let them watch television in Mandarin, that's all they knew. Like, they just thought that that's the way the world was. Like, you can only watch TV in Mandarin, and you must get beaten and trained by a Kung Fu master twice a day. But if you fast forward, right, and we moved to Singapore, well, I didn't have a Kung Fu master anymore, and all of a sudden they noticed other kids got to watch English-speaking television. And so, really, we're just products of our environment. So if you grow up in an environment where people aren't focused on health and wellness, and it's all about making money and having material things or smoking cigars or whatever it is, it wasn't too long ago when there used to be commercials on television, and literally there was a doctor in a laboratory wearing a coat, white coat, and it was on TV. Now it was almost like we're a little crazy, right? We're very commercially oriented. We think being advanced as human beings means, you know, selling more stuff, making more money. And believe me, I like to make money. I'm an entrepreneur at heart. But you can't blame the masses out there in the first world who have gotten hooked on this drug of consumerism. Mm-hmm. And so they don't, you know, today I was out hiking the mountain and I had my Vibrams on. So it wasn't barefoot, but it was close to being barefoot. And I'm reconnected with the earth, and I'm out there with the bears, and I'm picking some berries, and, I'm not a super crunchy guy or a granola or whatever you'd call me, but I'm somewhat reconnected, and it's only because of my mother. It's only because of that environment. If it had it not been that, I would have been, my story I'd be telling you right now would be from jail. I would have been in jail, and I would have been telling you about how many people I killed.
Yeah, Joe, you know, you mentioned your mother, and, you know, just from listening to a lot of the interviews that you've done, you've mentioned before that, you know, when you're in your teens, that she took a lot of your possessions away, such as like your pets and your bikes and things like that. And then for yourself now, you know, you don't take a wage at Spartan Race, and then you guys move kind of from year to year as well. So I was going to ask, are you a minimalist?
I think I'm a minimalist at heart. If I didn't have a family, and I was alone, which I don't want to be, I love my family to death, I would definitely live in a cabin in the woods. I would chop wood every day. My showers would be in an ice cold river going by the cabin. I would have a little farm going next to it. I'd probably escape the mountains every once in a while, go see a movie and eat some popcorn. But that would be my dream, living. Unfortunately, I have an awesome family, and I got to live in the real world. And so we have a car, and I like nice things, and I do all the things everybody else does. But just because I'm already considered a crackpot crazy, just with the whole Mandarin thing and the Kung Fu and all the other stuff I do. So, but if I had my way, I'd definitely be leaning towards minimalism.
And Joe, why the move from Singapore to Vancouver?
So I don't want to stay more than a year anywhere. I've got to stay a year because of the children with school. And Singapore was easy. It was awesome. But it was a big step coming from a farm to Asia. I didn't know what to expect. It was hot. But it was easy. I mean, it's a pretty advanced country. Tokyo is super easy, super clean. People are awesome. Other than a few missiles flying over North Korea, there's places easy. And then Vancouver, I'd never been here before. So literally about 3 weeks ago, I said, my wife, let's move to Vancouver. Somebody said, it's awesome. And so she came over, we picked out a house to rent, and we're here. And so 1 year, because the kids have to do school, no more than a year, because I don't want to get too comfortable. And I like being disruptive. And it was unbelievable to be able to move around the world and grow the business and spread the message and learn about new places.
Yeah, with Spartan Race, Joe, where have you found in the world, you know, that's had kind of the biggest response?
Doesn't matter where we go. It works everywhere. Everybody wants to be reconnected with the earth. They want to be reconnected with themselves. Albert Einstein said, if you want to get to know yourself, you know, put yourself through some adversity, right? Adversity introduces a man or woman to themselves. So it feels really good when you just want water, food, and shelter, and you're not worried about the ridiculous things we all get caught up in. Doesn't matter where we go. We haven't been to Mars yet, but there hasn't been a country we haven't been able to conquer yet.
So you brush shoulders with a lot of high-level people, athletes, entrepreneurs, great minds, great thinkers, Joe. What is a common trait or maybe some common denominators with these people, your circle of influence, that they all have in common that constantly want to push the boundaries of human potential?
I think the biggest one is understanding how to build a network, and not a network on Facebook and not a network on LinkedIn, but a true network where you shake hands, look people in the eyes, and do things for people. Don't have your hand out. Don't ask for money. That money will come a decade later or whenever, if ever, but don't sweat it. And that is the number one thing that brings, sorry, there's a really high end car driving by.
Sounded like a Lambo.
That was a little noisy. Doesn't would have liked that car. Yeah, you build that network. You don't have your hand out. You're not asking for anything in return. And it comes back tenfold later, maybe 10 years from now. Put $10 in for every $1 you try to take out. And you got to be really passionate. You got to build a network. Got to be really passionate about what you do. Because anytime you're shooting for extreme success, it requires extreme sacrifice. You're going to wake up super early. You're going to go to bed late. Everything that can go wrong does go wrong. Everybody's got a plan until they get punched in the face, right? Mike Tyson. Yep. And you got to be able to work hard. So extremely passionate, work hard, and build a tremendous network. You've got those three things going for you, you're going to crush it in life.
Yeah. Joe, you as a leader.
And business.
Joe, you as a leader, you know, you work at 100 miles an hour sometimes. How do you select staff that kind of, you know, can either compliment you, or do you kind of pick staff that have the same sort of traits, or do you kind of go away from that a little bit?
We only hire people that just got out of prison. We require at least a 2 or 3 year stint.
Really?
And prep kidding.
I was going to say, I'm looking at Tristan. I'm like, what?
You got to have hardcore people working for you. I think if you hire resilience and passion and grit and don't worry about domain expertise, you're always going to, like, you could teach people anything. What you can't teach them is you've been to a deli or to a clothing store, any kind of commercial enterprise. And there's that person, it could be a hotel concierge, it could be the doorman that just has energy.
Yeah.
Right. And you want to be around that person, and they look you in the eyes. They shake your hand. Those are the people you've got to hire. And those people, they're unstoppable. They break down walls to get shit done. And so you got to hire those people. You teach them the ropes, and you win.
Yeah, we were when you mentioned the prison, we were talking to a gentleman, Tom Bilyeu, and in an interview over a year ago, he said that when he was starting Quest, he was hiring like at-risk teens and people who had been in and out of prison. So I was wondering if that was like something that I didn't know about that happens quite often. But let's talk about hindsight 2020. You said it's going on 2 decades. with the Spartan race, are there any things that stick out to your mind that maybe you keep to you that you're like, damn, I wish we would have done this differently?
Yeah, you know, I've talked about this a couple of times. The reality is I did a lot of things wrong. I should have invested early on in technology. And so if you really believe in the business, and I'm not sure I believed in it in the early days. I didn't know it was going to be as big as it is right now. I should have invested in a CRM and really detailed, you know, tech people and tech resources. And so now I'm playing catch up, right? Now I've got millions and millions of participants, and I gotta play catch up on all this stuff.
Hey Joe, do you personally design or even help design some of the courses that go on around the world?
I did in the early days. I don't think they want me designing courses. I'm a little too crazy. I shake things up a bit, but I have a team that used to race with me that just absolutely crushes it, and they've expanded that team, and I'm just amazed. They put on over 200 events around the globe flawlessly. Obviously, we make mistakes like everybody does, but this team they're the best. They get it done.
So I was talking to an astrophysicist, and he was telling me about panspermia, about when, you know, comets and asteroids collide into planets and like little pieces. It's almost like pollination onto other pieces of the galaxy. And then it has me thinking about you saying you went from Tokyo to Singapore to Vancouver. You're almost like pollinating or own version of panspermia with your brand. Is this something that was part of your reason for doing that?
I definitely believe in the network, as I said to you. I don't know if I alone am as scalable as a comet. I do have a lot of energy, and I do meet a ton of people, and it's probably helping the business a little bit, but no mistake around, this business would do well with or without me. I think I'm doing it as much for me and the family to turn our lives upside down each year and experience new places as I am in building the business. I did help in Singapore. I built out of Southeast Asia. If I wasn't there, it would have been harder for us to do. Asia is a tough place to get going. Japan was a nearly impossible place to get going. So it was good I was there. We got it launched. Vancouver, we've been on the West Coast to Canada for a while, but we have not attacked it in a big way. So this year I'll attack it and, hopefully it'll be like an asteroid hitting ground here.
So it's safe to say you have the same amount of input that you had when you started.
Oh yeah, no, I have probably too much input. I'm pretty opinionated, and I just love this business. I said to a guy today, we were walking in the woods and doing that hike I told you about, and I said to him, I don't think in my lifetime, my kid's lifetime, that we'll ever be able to own a brand again with the word Spartan. It's like unbelievable. It's better than Richard Branson's Virgin. It's it's an unbelievable word, a name, and it has tremendous meaning. And so I'm in this thing forever.
That's awesome. Yeah, where were you when you kind of figured out that Spartan was that big connection with you?
I think I always was a little off. I always sought cold showers and carrying rocks around the neighborhood, and I don't know why that was. It's probably a combination of like that neighborhood I grew up in, that a lot of people, who I keep joking about, a lot of people went to jail, a lot of organized crime. And so I think as a young kid, you say to yourself, could you do the time? Because everybody was either getting killed or going to jail. And so you play that tape in your head. But when the word Spartan came up at the kitchen table as a potential name for this business, it was just obvious. But I honestly hadn't thought of it before. For the 10 years prior, I hadn't thought of that word. So I got lucky.
And then
I got lucky that it was available. I mean,
big time.
For sure.
You know, it's not easy to get a word available.
I'm very intrigued by like how individually we're all wired differently. You talk about your upbringing in that neighborhood. Is that help fuel that fire? What is your constant reason for wanting to keep seeing how far you could push it?
I, um, I just feel like I'm, you know, my mother died when I was at a young age. My father died. Most of my family's dead. And I don't know. I guess I recognized early on life's really short. And I always want to, I want to squeeze twice the amount of juice out of it than is available. Why wouldn't I? Like we could sleep when we're dead. So you know, a guy gave me a great analogy the other day. This bank manager said to me, you know, it sounds like you're stretching a rubber band. If you could visualize somebody putting a rubber band in their hand and stretching it. And then once you've got somebody stretched, you know, as far as you could stretch them, then you upgrade to a bigger rubber band and stretch even further. And that's the way I approached life. Just push limits. Yeah. And then we're dead.
Yeah, you really struggle to take like a beach holiday, don't you?
You don't even know what I just went through to get this foot massage. My wife was like, come on, I'm taking you to this reflexology thing. And I was like, first of all, if anybody sees me in a friggin' foot massage, I am dead.
And how was it?
No, all kinds of sports people go here. And, you know, it was coming off the heels of this hike I did today, which was awesome with that gentleman I told you about. And he, when we were done with the hike, he goes, listen, you know, as far as we both were, and we were out there talking about all these things that you and I are talking about right now. He showed me a picture just a few weeks ago. He was on the highway and some guy passed him in a car doing 140 kilometers an hour and had to get somewhere fast, kind of like we're describing my life now, right? Nonstop. And, you know, 10 minutes later, they pulled up to a scene of an accident. This guy hit a pickup truck head on. Jesus. His car completely exploded, died instantly. The car he hit, both people died in the car and the dog. And so, so coming off the heels of that photo and that conversation, it would have been something my mother would have said. And I was like, you know what? I guess I'll go get this foot massage. So it was great. It was good. I knocked out 37 emails during the foot massage. So it wasn't a complete relaxation thing.
So yeah, on the no pun intended, again, on the heels of multitasking, while you're getting that massage, you're sending out emails. Is this one of your strengths, you feel?
Yeah, you know, I grew up against this guy that I used to call Big Phil, and he was a monster. I mean, this guy can kill you with his bare hands. And I'm a little kid hanging out with him. He was a friend of my father's. And wherever we went, he knew Tai Chi. You know, all these different forms of Tai Chi. And so we could be in motor vehicles or we could be going to get lunch or whatever. Any moment that was available, he was doing something. He was exercising. And he said to me, and I was probably like 11 years old, why would you waste any time? And now it looked weird, right? Here he is doing Tai Chi online in the Department of Motor Vehicles that people are moving out of the way. But I got that at a young age. And I said, you know, you're right. Like, why would I waste any time? So I try not to waste, I exponentially multitask.
Hey, Joe, I just wanted to get your opinion on, you know, the current form of education. Because I know that, you know, back in the day, it took you, what, 3 or 4 attempts to get into college. And where did you go? Was it Cornell?
Yeah, I went to Cornell, fought my way in. Yeah. Super, super pumped that they finally let me in.
Yeah, but just in doing that, like, you know, before you described taking your children around the world and, you know, testing them in different sort of scenarios with different methods of kind of education. So, you know, what's kind of the way that you want to educate them and what do you kind of see with the current educational system in front of us?
Well, I mean, ultimately, the best education... two motorcycles going by. Sorry, guys.
That's education.
The best education, in my opinion, would be homeschooling. But in order for it to be effective, you've got to really put the time in. Because like I said, we have 4 children. And just trying to do 1 page of math homework with 1 kid and the other 3 not, like, it's hard. So you got to be committed and disciplined with doing it. But there's no doubt in my mind that that's the best education. Because just the number of things they're going to learn per hour is exponentially greater than with what happens in school. That said, you don't get the social interaction, right? You don't get to do the team sports necessarily if you're being educated at home. So in my mind, could you combine the two? Could you teach a little bit at home? Could you put them in the school for the social setting? And then, I mean, this is a layup what I'm about to say, and everybody should be doing it. Why would you let them watch TV or play video games in their own language. Like, my thing is, you can watch as much TV as you want, as long as it's in Mandarin, I don't care. And obviously there's resistance. There wasn't resistance in the early days, but because they didn't know any better. Now there's resistance because they know there's English on TV. But they're learning Mandarin that way. That's how Arnold Schwarzenegger learned English from in Europe, you know, growing up in Europe. So we should be forced to, I just found a Netflix. I figured out after 4 years of fighting, trying to get Mandarin DVDs, which was a nightmare. I figured out on Netflix how to get, Mandarin audio, which is a game changer. Problem is you can't lock it. So if I'm not looking, they change it to English, my kids. So you got to be constantly on them.
Why Mandarin and not Spanish?
Well, Mandarin's a pretty big country. It's the most used language in the world. My personal opinion is, if you're able to speak Mandarin in their exact accent where they feel comfortable, you're going to do a lot of business in China over the next 20, 30 years. So I want to give them that leg up. I'd love them to know Spanish too, but I feel like Spanish you could pick up easy. It's not a tonal language, right? Same word in Mandarin with different tone means different things. So you're also getting the benefit of learning a little bit of getting some music skills, believe it or not, and some math skills by learning Mandarin, even though it's just happening in your brain.
Yeah, I was.
And then the other thing is math, right? You gotta be good at math. I don't care how creative, you gotta be able to do math. So I push math pretty hard.
Yeah, that's interesting you said about Spanish. I was working at nightclubs in LA in my 20s, and that's how I learned Spanish. The guys in the back making the salads and stuff, they were from Mexico, and they would speak only Spanish to me, and I would speak only English, and then we had to flip-flop it. And then I ended up picking it up just like that. So I guess
–
how old were you? Because they talk about – in psychology, in terms of picking up behaviors and then having things stick, specifically with our vernacular, you have to be in this sweet spot of age. Like if you take a kid at like 18 and try to teach them a language, it's going to be much more difficult than teaching them at like 8. So were your kids super young when they started learning Mandarin, and are they able to hold conversations in it?
Right out of the gate. Wow. I'll give you a great story. When we moved to Singapore, right out of the gate, we started with the Mandarin thing. But great story is I landed in Singapore. That was our first overseas trip for the year. And I get to the Canadian International School. Don't ask me why that's the school we picked. It was great. And we go in there and they won't put them in the Mandarin classes, my oldest son. They put the other ones in, the other three, but they won't put them in the bilingual program. And I said, listen, the only reason I moved here was like, this is a critical component. I can't live here if you're not going to put the kid in the bilingual program. So they said, look, we'll give you 2 weeks to get him tuned up. He's got to take the test again. If he passes the test, we'll put him in. Otherwise, he's just not good enough at it. So I came home and I said, listen, honey, I said to my wife, we got to move him into a local's house here where they only speak Mandarin for 2 weeks. We're just going to have to drop him off and then pick him up 2 weeks from now and just make sure he could handle his test. Otherwise, we're screwed. So I literally dropped him off at this guy's house I met who's they just speak Mandarin in the house. And he came back and he crushed it. Crush the test at the bilingual program. So I think if you build those basics like you were getting in the back of the kitchen there, and we built those basics from a young age, all I got to do is complete, people talk about immersion. I talk about submersion, complete submersion into that language. and they'll be fine.
What's up, guys? Be sure to pick up your free copy of Conversations with Champions. This is our free ebook, which is comprised of inspirational quotes from past guests that we've had on the show.
Get inspirational quotes from champions such as Evander Holyfield, Jonathan Thurston, Grant Cardone, Gary Vee, Larry Holmes, Mario Andretti, Anthony Mundine, Joe DeFranco, and many, many more.
To pick up your free copy now, just simply go to our website, www.divisionboardpodcast.com/ebook. Put your name and email in the slot. It takes about 10 seconds, and we'll send you the book directly to your inbox. Now back to the show.
Hey, Joe, what does your training look like at the moment?
My training or their training?
No, your training. Your physical and probably mental training, too.
My training is right now, I got these, about 14 bodyweight movements, 50 reps of each I do every day. And then since I got to Vancouver, I found this mountain right near the house. I've been running up and down, hiking up and down. I can't say I run it. It's pretty steep. And And that's been my, my routine probably the last 2 or 3 weeks. For about 5 weeks during the summer, a little less, I was running 10 miles a day. I had a great routine going. I was running 10 miles a day, 300 burpees, 150 pull-ups. And I was on fire for a little while, but it required a serious commitment. And then I cooled it down, and I've just been doing these body weight movements.
All right, Joe, I need a recommendation. I'm a strength coach down here in Sydney, and two of my clients are going to be in Vancouver in 2 weeks. And they're in their late 40s. Okay. Yeah, they're going to be up there, and they're doing – when I asked them a couple months ago, why are you going to Vancouver, they said to go into the wilderness, go into the mountains, and see the bears. And you've already referenced all three things that they said. So now I'm thinking, are there any recommendations you have for either if you know Vancouver well enough yet, spots to go or also gyms that they could train at?
Yeah. I'll hook them up. If you email me, I'll hook them up with the stuff I've just been learning. But I've met a bunch of people already here, and I got the spots for them.
Awesome, man.
The spot I've been going to, they call it the Grind. And what I've been told is that a lot of people that are really interested in fitness move to Vancouver, but the crazy ones within that group move to North Vancouver. Randomly, that's where we are in North Vancouver. So when I go do this Grind every day, and it's, 2 miles straight up the mountain, stone stairs, which I love, I am shocked that there are hundreds and hundreds. They need a stoplight. There are so many people climbing these stairs. Doesn't matter what time I go, 6 in the morning, 9 o'clock at night, jam-packed.
Wow.
Mm. What's it like over there? Because in Sydney, we've got a pretty major issue with obesity. And, me and Johnny traveled to America a lot as well. And it's a pretty obvious problem as well. From just your small time, what have you observed about Vancouver?
Looks great. Everybody looks pretty fit.
Yeah.
Not a big problem here. Definitely a big problem in America. Not a problem at all in Japan. I didn't see much of a problem in Singapore. America, you see it right away. Just as I said that, two obese people just walked by me. But,
synchronicity.
But in general, I mean, very, very few people, everybody looks very fit here.
Yeah, I'm loving the, because Tristan and I, we talked, there's a lot of conversations we get to have because, we choose to do this platform. But we talked, the Mandarin with the young kids of yours, do you have those certain guidelines with the nutrition for them as well? Like, would we ever see a descendant child eating Doritos and Little Debbies and stuff like that?
It's a tough one because, again, it's a 50-50 partnership in marriage and family. And so I have to give on a couple of things. I can't win every battle. Mm. And I do buy into this idea that my wife pounds into me, which is, you don't want to be so restrictive that then they chase it later. Right. So you when they were younger and I was on the farm in Vermont, I'd go skiing at Killington and we'd be sitting there, me and the boys. And, we just got done skiing for 3 hours or whatever. They did kung fu in the morning. And some guy would, and I'm thinking we're eating healthy. And some guy would walk over and give the kids cookies. Like some guy I don't even know. I'm like, what the fuck, dude? Are you fucking kidding me? Do you know how hard it is to get me to where I am this afternoon, with these kids? And you just ruined my day. Because now I'm the asshole dad that has to throw away the cook, right? So we live in an environment where I've been to dentist offices where they hand the kids candy when you're leaving. It's just fucking crazy. So, would you see them eating Doritos a little bit? Probably not. Do I let them eat some cake here and there or some ice cream? My thing is, look, we can go get ice cream. Well, I'll give you a great example. I've been making them do the stairs with me. Tomorrow we'll do the stairs to the top. And at the top they have hot chocolate and whipped cream, which would never be on our list. But I'm like, you know what? These kids just crushed it, right? I've got to give them something so that when I tell them tomorrow morning at 6 a.m. we're going to climb the mountain again, maybe they say to themselves, oh, you know what? Dad at least lets us get some stuff at the top. Because if I'm too much, too difficult, like my mother was. My mother was impossible. The kids don't want to hang out with you.
Yeah.
Right? So if we lived in the woods and they never saw anything else from other people, no problem. But I'm the outlier here. Everybody else is eating junk food around them.
Joe, I really appreciate your time. We've got a couple of personality questions just to wrap things up. Johnny's got the first one.
All right, Joe DeSena, let's give our listeners and your fans as well some advice on bad days or adversity.
So my thing is, it could always be worse. A lot of people get stuck on, oh, I wish it was sunny out. Oh, I wish I didn't have this injury. Oh, I wish this. I wish I wasn't married to this person. I don't think that way. I think it could be a lot worse. I could be missing arms and legs. I could be living in Siberia. I could be dead, right?
Yeah.
If you measure everything against being dead, it's a pretty low bar. Everything looks better. So just flip it around. Change your frame of reference.
Yeah, I agree with that. All right, Joe, I'm going to take you back to your childhood. When you were growing up, what posters did you have on your bedroom wall?
I was just thinking about that recently. There was a girl, Christy McNichol. I think that's the name. We have to look her up.
Was she hot?
I think she was like, I thought so. I might have the wrong name. It's so many years ago. But I've been thinking about that because my son, who's 11, doesn't have any pictures of girls yet. And I'm saying, Jesus, we got to get some pictures up. I don't know what's going on here.
And Joe, if three of your best friends were sitting at a table and you weren't in the room, what sort of things would they be saying about you?
They would say he's nuts. He doesn't stop and smell the roses. Yeah, they would not be saying, but he's motivated and he's driven.
Hey, we've just brought up Christy.
Christy McNichol. We pulled her up on Google Images, man, and I can see
she's got that hair going on. Yeah, she's pretty cute.
She's like a girl next door look.
I can't Google it right now because I'm on with you guys on Skype. But listen, it has been. I'm 48 years old. It's been 35 years since I even thought of that name. Wow. So I got to look it up.
Yeah, it's definitely a blast from the past with these images.
All right,
I can't even believe the name popped in my head.
Yeah, that's awesome,
it's
man.
It's a sign, man. You got to have a look tonight.
Yeah.
All right, final question, Joe. Joe, you're going to be hosting a private dinner party. You've got 5 invites. Now, only rules, no family or friends, but it can be anyone, dead or alive. Who would you like to invite?
5 people. I got to have Shackleton. He's got to be there. I've got to have Sir Edmund Hillary. I've got to have Richard Branson. I've got to have Neil Armstrong. And Muhammad Ali.
Excellent.
That's a fucking dinner party, dude. Jesus, that is a dinner party.
Savage dinner party.
That's a savage dinner party.
All right, Joe, before we let you leave, everyone get following Joe. Make sure you do a Spartan Race. So www.spartanrace.com. On Twitter is The Real Joe DeSena. And he's got a great podcast, the Spartan Up podcast, which you can find on iTunes or YouTube.
Joe DeSena, man.
Hey, listen.
We appreciate you sitting down with us.
To all your guests, we have a race on December 16th in Iceland. It's a $750 entry. I'm going to give away 6 of them to your listeners. So it's extremely dark in Iceland in December. It's only like 2 hours of sunlight. Very little food. It's going to be like 24 hours of hell. So anybody that wants in, let me know.
Okay, what's the best way for them? Just send you an email?
Well, why don't you collect the 6 people that are bold and brash enough to go for it and just shoot me an email, joe@spartan.com, and I'll hook them up.
Done.
Excellent, man. Once again, thanks for sharing the space with us, Joe D. You were awesome.
See you. Take care.
Thanks. Johnny, that was not a long chat, but it was a great chat, I thought.
It's a chat that you and I have been looking forward to. You have that personal connection with Ro, and Ro went out to Singapore to stay with DeSena. He's not the end. Like, I've seen him on shows before. He's way more... this isn't supposed
to...
Yeah, he's more nurturing than I was expecting, with a slash of morbidity.
You can tell he's kind of dude that, you know, we spoke about this just before, you know, we had a long day today, so we had to go back-to-back interviews. So this is the first time we've actually had to put this onto air. But, you know, he's a chilled-out dude, the type of guy that you would have a beer with, and you'd probably just sit back and just listen.
Yeah, imagine being his son or his daughter. You must watch shows in Mandarin. All right, Pops, dude, I guess I ain't watching shows.
You know when he said that? Like, you know what freaked me out once? Like, I had this TV that you can easily – sorry, when I was growing up, I had this TV which you could flick easily onto another language. But when it goes to the other language, it's hard to change it back.
Hold on,
I did it once, and I couldn't get it back for like 8 hours, so it freaked me out, man.
Hold on. So you had the TV wouldn't – it wouldn't only change the subtitles, it would change the audio?
Well, I don't know what the fuck it was doing, but it was like it was freaking me out.
Yeah. We get so conditioned into what we're used to and what we're comfortable about. But some of those things, like the main priority of him going to Singapore, of his son initially not getting into that bilingual course, and him telling the teacher and the powers that be, look, we only came here for this. That's a powerful statement. That shows conviction. That shows also like a level of duty as a parent. And think about the world collectively. If, you know, there is no rule book or guidebook on parenting. I'm not a parent, so I'm not speaking from experience, but I have them. And it's like, you know, that's a pretty high bar, and that's an awesome aspect of DeSena.
What an interesting education these kids are going to live, going from country to country, town to town, every
culture
year.
To culture.
That's interesting. They're going to have to learn how to make, like, their resilience once they're 18. Not only, like, their knowledge base, you know, they're probably going to know 5 or 6 different languages by the time they're 18. The fact that they have to make friends every single year, so their social circle. And just even getting, you know how hard it is to make friends sometimes when you're the only person in the room and you know no one?
Or the new kid?
Imagine doing that like every single year. That's quite resilient, would you think?
Yeah, resiliency is a great word for that. It's also, it puts the young person, the child, in a sort of like, if you're Joe DeSantis' kid, you're not probably going to be one to run away from that, shy away from that because of genetics. But you have to learn those behaviors through experience. And I think combining the genetic, you know, threshold that the DeSena has—I mean, he's a physical type of dude—with the experience that his children are having by doing that, that's putting those young people in a position to really reach their full potential, which is another attribute to the guy and whoever else is, you know, his wife and everybody else in that family.
Oh, big time! Just getting out of your comfort zone. I'm pretty excited just to see the evolution of his children and what they're going to be like when they're adults.
I'm excited to see the evolution of you, Tristan, when you're an adult.
Here it is. That could be years away. That could be
long time waiting. I got the clock. You know, it keeps tick tock, and I'm like, when is TK going to grow up? But hey, man, that's why we love you.
Oh, Peter Pan.
The boys.
All right, guys, we've recorded. We're pretty busy this morning, so
yeah, man.
You know, we did a great podcast also with Ben Greenfield. So a lot of sort of learning experience. Ben's quite the character, and he's an interesting dude. So I'm really
human guinea pig, right? Self-experimentation, research. He's one of these people that the fitness industry needs to constantly be pushing thresholds, good or bad, whatever you think about anybody's ideologies. People need to be pressing through these thresholds, and Ben Greenfield's one of these guys.
Yeah. All right. Before we leave, Johnny, social media.
Follow me, guys. Johnny Stofko, all socials. Appreciate you.
Yeah, I'm Tristan Cannell. If you want to get in touch with both of us at the same time, send us a quick email, info@thevisionboardpodcast.com.
Couldn't have said it better, TK.
Johnny, I like that. That was really fun. Yeah. I enjoyed that chat. I love getting dudes. I don't know what it is about getting dudes on when they're kind of late 40s, early 50s. It's just kind of – maybe that's our next step.
Synchronicity. Hopefully we can make it to that side. It's kind of like what was it Charles Poliquin said, guys who have been to the other side, those are people that I learned from. And, hey, I'm adopted that philosophy.
Yeah, I'm the same. All right, man. Fun times, and I'll check you next week.
Have fun at the races, big dog.
See you, man.
Peace.
Welcome to the Vision Board Podcast, stories of success from around the world.
You guys are scratching an itch, and that's why this podcast has become popular and successful, is because you guys are scratching an itch. You're enjoying it, and you're also benefiting from the knowledge that people are dropping.
I've never met the person in my life, including my parents, that was able to outwill me about me.
Whatever profession you're in, you need to keep working harder. You know, nothing comes easy these days, and you know, you'll get knocked down, but get back up, that counts, so just keep working hard at it.
You know, you guys said you do stuff, you ask things that aren't Googleable. You guys are 2 for 2.
There's never been a time in my life where anybody ever was able to tell me who I was more than I knew who I was.
To join our vision and follow the journey, please subscribe to the Vision Board Podcast via iTunes, SoundCloud, and Stitcher.